Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, I tell you, that was a spellbinding. I was on the edge of my seat that first hour. I really was. Man, I tell you, we had, in case you're just tuning in, we had John Friend on. He writes for the America Free Press and the Barnes Review, a great magazine. Two different people send me that magazine. I don't know who it is, but I get two copies of it. But I'd like to thank him. We also had Lee Wilson on. He was a private detective. He was hired of all the detectives in the state of Georgia, of the McMichael team. That's Greg and Travis McMichaels and friend William Freddy Bryan. They were convicted in a kangaroo court in Georgia. It's been about a year ago when they pronounced sentence. You know, they're serving two dual life sentences without parole for a murder and for a hate crime, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, now we're transitioning, and we have two other equally outstanding guests on. We have Mr. Paul Fromm. Y'all, he's been around as long as I have. Mr. Fromm's been an activist for white people for as long as I can remember. And we also have Jason Robb coming on tonight. And everybody knows Mr. Jason Robb. He's the attorney for the Knights Council of the Ku Klux Klan. And I consider him like a spirit son. I love him to death. I bet him it was just instant chemistry. You see somebody, you love them at first sight. And he's just like one of my own kids. In fact, he's younger than my youngest child. But anyway, since Mr. Paul is the elder brother, we'll let him introduce himself first. How you doing tonight, Paul?
Well, I'm just warming up. My crew and I have been out all afternoon waving banners. I'm running for mayor of Hamilton, and of course we get the usual media freeze. They either don't cover us or use the usual smears. White supremacists, which really seems to scare the aged leftist lesbians out of their wits. So we have to. We go out and meet people with our election cards, and we had these displays of banners with some of the stands I'm taking. We got a lot of attention, and it was really exciting. It was really cold, so I'm running for mayor of Hamilton, which is a city of a little over half a million at the western tip of Lake Ontario. I'm also the head of the Canadian Association for Free Expression that stands up for our dwindling rights to free speech, and also the head of the Canada First Immigration Reform Committee, which would like to restore the traditional balance in immigration. We are being absolutely flooded by the third world. 85% of each year's intake, which is twice your intake proportionately, comes from the third world. And our population is being changed. We will be a minority European country by about 2045 or 2048. So the founding settler people who built this country and your country too will be a minority. And of course, you all know you'll be a minority in your own country by about 2040 or 2041. You will have been replaced. I mean, this is diabolical. Anyway, in a nutshell, that's what I'm about.
Well, see, I pulled up an article you sent me. It's Paul Fromm on implicating the clergy plan, a hatred of whites in a witch's brew, which is cauldron in Ottawa, and from the Canadian Association for Free Expression. And you've been around that before. We go to Jason, my wonderful friend and spirit son. You've been in this fight for as long as I can remember. Paul, how long have you been an activist for white people in Canada?
Well, I guess I would say my first activism was fairly low-key. Was in 1965. I helped, did some leafleting for a conservative candidate, but I got more, let's say, hardcore. Early the next year, when Rhodesia had declared independence, this was a wonderful, wonderful experiment, and it, of course, was subverted by Britain and the United States. But when it declared independence, I was immediately very much attracted to it. And in those days, our high schools, the high schools in the Toronto area, had what they call a modern UN assembly. So each school would take a country, and they would represent the country, and they go down on Sunday afternoon and have debates representing their country. Well, I showed up in early 1966 at one of their meetings and stood up and said, I am representing White Independent Rhodesia. Well, needless to say, but you know, the funny thing was, somebody called my school, it was a private school, and I guess the priests were mildly embarrassed, but it didn't affect me. And they said, well, you maybe shouldn't have done that. Today, you'd be expelled. I mean, we really were a somewhat more tolerant society back then. Anyway, that was one of my first political actions. But I've been actively involved in electoral politics, but also in, you know, what you might call informational, educational politics ever since. You know, I mean, I see it as, you know, part of my life's mission. This is what I do.
Well, I'll tell you what, you probably would have been better off if you just told the people that their mother was a whore, because they wouldn't have had as much vitriol against you if you'd done that. I mean, when you were defending an all-white country like Rhodesia,
Let me tell you a couple of episodes, like from today, but they've been repeated elsewhere. We would park ourselves with our signs at an island in the road where there's, you know, a lot of traffic in both directions. And so cars would often have to pull up and stop at a light so they'd really see our signs well. And this woman rolled down the windows and screaming, she's white. You're a white supremacist. You're a white supremacist. Why do you hate black people? There's nothing on a sign that you talks about black people. And it's only the communist, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation that says I'm a white supremacist. I would argue with them I'm not. There's a distinction between being a white nationalist and a supremacist. But the rage, the hatred. Then one of my big backers has my signs in his store window, and some woman came in yesterday, absolutely red in the face, screaming, you have to take those signs down. He's a white supremacist. And the store owner, who's, you know, a real stand-up guy, said, you're making a lot of noise. You're bothering my customers. Go. Amen. But there are others who would have folded. I mean, I don't know particularly why it enrages middle-aged, not very good-looking white women with a standard short haircut. Why? I'm not even saying a lot about being a white nationalist. I'm against traffic gridlock, uncontrolled immigration that's swamping our city, and anti-freedom policies, you know, which brought in forced masking and forced vaccine and things like that. I mean, but the rage, you know, it really is, in some ways it's frightening. Some of these people have lost their heads.
It is frightening. You know, I was just thinking, you know, Jason's dad has been in, he has also been an activist, and Jason was born into it. Jason, tell the audience right quick, like, before we go to a break, before I've got some questions to ask you and Paul again, too. So, Jason, give us just a real quick bio of yourself.
Well, as many of you are aware, my name is Jason Robb. I'm an attorney here in Harrison, Arkansas. My dad's Pastor Thomas Robb, who's National Director of the Knights Party and Senior Pastor of the Christian Revival Center. We've had Paul down to our conferences many, many times over the years. Paul and many others out there are, you know, have been just a tremendous inspiration, I think, to hundreds and probably thousands of people, knowing that there are people out there, even in Canada, that's, you know, doing what they can to, you know, sound this alarm of, you know, the white genocide and the trampling on our freedom of speech. And so, you know, Paul's a good friend of ours. And so, my, like I said, my dad's been involved since the mid-60s, him and my wife. My wife and I, we're involved, but my mom and dad, since the mid-60s, have been involved to raise our family, brother and sister, kids, grandkids. All our families are involved. And talking about Paul Fromm, actually, I have a picture of him in my office with him and my son, who's now 16 years old, but when he was a little baby. And I have that picture in my office because when my kids are in the office, you know, I'll occasionally say, hey, you know, this is, you know, Paul Fromm, and, you know, he's one of our heroes. He's one of these people out there fighting for your future, you know. And so, you know, Paul Fromm is really an inspiration to my family, and I know a lot of people out there because, you know, you don't see many people that are willing to stick their necks out and stay in the fight. You know, they may get involved for 5 or 10 years, and they think, well, it's too hard, and they just kind of go away. And Paul is a testimony of never give up. And so I know I kind of sidetracked on of our background.
You're doing great. You're doing great.
But Paul Fromm, we really love him. He's a great guy.
Well, he's been around.
You're always a great host.
Yeah.
Always. He's been around as long as I remember. People, we're going to our first break. We have the one and only Paul Fromm, who's been in this fight as long as I have. And, I tell you what, Jason's right. It is hard. It is very, very hard. And we got Jason Robb. We'll be right back as soon as this first message is over.
Have you ever had great honey? No, I mean really good, all-natural, raw honey. Well, now you can, thanks to localhoneyman.com. We can ship out our locally made honey all across the U.S. So don't worry, you won't miss out. Plus, Local Honeyman has so many different flavors, like Utah Wildflower, High Desert Delight, Happy Valley, and Blackberry, just to name a few. So purchase your delicious raw honey today at localhoneyman.com.
I'm Monica Schaefer from Canada, a former political prisoner. Here at Blood River Radio, we are not afraid to tell the truth and shame the devil. Our mission is to fight against white genocide. We do that by exposing the lies. We talk about the American Civil War. We talk about the vilification of German people and, by extension, all white people. And we even talk about that linchpin lie, the Holocaust. Deception by the alien enemy within has brought us whites to our knees. My last words at the Schaefer's speech crime trial in Germany were, quote, "If there was a law forbidding us to breathe, we would break that law immediately just to live. And so it is with this law. We must break this law in order to survive and thrive as a people," unquote. Please donate to Blood River Radio and help keep us on the air.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
Oh, dear Blood River Radio family, we're right back. We're going to go right back. Jason Robb is going to open up. He's going to start asking questions, making any comments he would like about this. Like, for instance, whether he wants to talk about it or not. What is this thing called the clergy plan that Paul Fromm is so excited about? You know, what about that? Go ahead, Jason. Take it away, son.
Sure. So Paul, getting ready for the show, I had watched a video of you speaking with some of your supporters in Ottawa, talking about the Prime Minister there and others that are, you know, I guess trying to implement, you know, the what we would call the genocide of the Canadian stock, you know, the original European white folks, and I know that's they're doing the same thing, same thing here in the United States. But this plan that they're doing in Ottawa, I guess, and I'm sure it's the country itself. Is it a plan to specifically to bring this vast majority of non-white immigrants into Canada to basically to replenish the old white European stock, as you would say?
Yes. Well, a little bit of background. Count Coudenhove Kalergi was a Austro-Hungarian aristocrat, a mixed race. His mother was Japanese, his father was Austro-Hungarian. He began to be active in the early 20s, and he came up with this, what he called the Kalergi Plan, but it was a plan for the European Union. It eventually became the European Union. And it was really quite kind of sneaky, because the European Union, as it was presented after the Second World War, didn't sound maybe that bad, maybe reduce some of the trade barriers and maybe some of the travel restrictions. And, let the various European countries cooperate more. And that really matched the spirit of the times, because there was very, very great concern. After the two world wars in less than 30 years, there was a lot of Europeans who said, well, we've got to do better than this. We've got to try to cooperate and not have another war. Well, I'd agree with that. Yeah. So the European Union was then on the agenda, and that was very much what Kalergi was pushing. But, and this, here's the thing, that was only the beginning of the agenda. He wrote a book back in 1922 called Praktischer Idealismus, or Practical Idealism. And what he wanted was this. He wanted a new Europe with no nationalities. That's very important. No more Germans, no more French, no more nations. And there would be a new European man. The new European man would be a mixture of African and Asian. And there would be a new moral elite, and that would be the Jews. Well, now, that's the blueprint. And the first big part of it was to get rid of nations, get rid of nationalities. And that would be done in two ways, taking away their national power and amalgamating it into a European government, and then eventually swamping them with immigration. He didn't spell that out. And in 1922, a mixed race, a new European of mixed race would be hard to imagine, because there were hardly any non-whites in Europe. And it wouldn't be until somewhat after the Second World War that rotten governments started bringing in third worlders, first as supposedly guest workers, and then of course almost by right. Now they've had endless streams of so-called refugees and so on, and that of course that would be implement the plan, which to bring about a new race in Europe, simply replace the white people, to be quite blunt. And that's what's happening in Canada. That's why I say the present Canadian government, Justin Trudeau and his Minister of Immigration and most of his cabinet, are the children of Kalergi. They're eagerly replacing the European founding settler people, who Trudeau personally hates. He says, well, Canada really doesn't have any culture or any founding people. And he hates the term old stock Canadians. They want to replace us. Out of some crazy idealism that we would all be better if we were a Heinz 57 type of people, or whether even more sinister, and I suspect it's more sinister. But
I sometimes wonder if some of these leaders, they promoting, obviously, this agenda about bringing, non-whites to replace. You can name any country, Canada, United States, any of your European countries. They want to, replace it with, the non-whites, the non-traditional stock. I sometimes wonder if they can fathom that it's going to change the culture, if they even understand that, or if they think that, just having more of these non-whites is not really going to change the culture itself, and it'll just continue as is. Sometimes I wonder if they even can fathom, what this change actually means to themselves, because obviously they may be white and they may be in power and in their elected officials, but once you have a majority non-white in their countries, they're going to be voted out as well. And I don't know if they even understand that.
You're so right, Jason. I don't have a clear answer. I think some hate us so much, and maybe even in a sense hate themselves, that they want us to go out of existence. Others, I think, maybe have the same mindset that you're suggesting, and that is, things will change, but they really won't change all that much. And that slogan, people are people, we all bleed red, and it won't be all that different. And they also sort of fancy, because they've been so nice to the invaders will continue to reelect them. And they're absolutely dead wrong. Demography is destiny. It's true that the newcomers may at first go along with the old guard, but after maybe a generation, they'll want to. They'll be feeling their Cheerios and will take control for themselves. A very good example was a man from the Watergate era, Peter Rodino, who is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Well, I think he was elected right after World War II. And the District of Newark, New Jersey, which he represented, was hardcore Italian. But over the years, things changed. And by the time Rodino was about to retire, They still loyally reelected him, even though it was majority black. However, when he retired, the next congressman was black, and that's what will happen. I mean, even our traitors will be replaced.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't think I think so many of these whites out there who are basically had this false idea that all these immigrants are coming in, it's not really going to change anything. I don't think they even understand how it's going to definitely affect them. What I want to know, Paul, is when with your demonstrations that you're having out there and running for the mayor in Hamilton like that, is the media, are they just giving you a silent treatment for the most part?
Yeah, I was warned by an old political operative here in Hamilton that there's a very dirty little elite that controls politics and the media here in Hamilton, and that they would probably give me the silent treatment, and they have. I think we could run down the street bare naked, and we wouldn't get any publicity. Well, unless they could somehow make that into white supremacists.
Right.
I was invited to an all candidates debate, but was excluded. Well, they were only going to feature the what they think would be the top three of the nine candidates running. I went to a union gathering the other day. It was advertised as all candidates picnic. This was the Canadian Union of Public Employees. So I went, and first, I was greeted. I guess the people on the desk didn't know who I was.
Paul, we have to go to another break.
Okay.
Hold that thought, if you will. We've got to go one more break. People, hang on. We're going to come back in just a few minutes with Mr. Paul Fromm and Jason Robb right after this commercial break. So hang on.
You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News.
A week after Hurricane Ian slammed Florida, search and rescue efforts are still underway, and the death toll continues to rise. The adjunct general for the Florida National Guard, Major General James O'Iford, spoke about the biggest challenges right now.
We have about 17 urban search and rescue teams scattered throughout. Now they're kind of focused on the primary counties of Charlotte and Lee County, doing a lot of tremendous work.
The reported death toll from Hurricane Ian in Florida has jumped to at least 120 victims. Former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley has weighed in on President Joe Biden's Armageddon warning on Russian President Vladimir Putin's threats to use nuclear weapons.
You know, I mean, what's interesting to me, it's so unproductive. Every time he speaks, it's just unproductive because on one side, you're putting fear in Americans, which is not helpful, and it really questions his leadership. On the other side, if he knows Putin so well, he would know he should not be saying this is Armageddon because Putin is hearing that. When President Trump was in office, you didn't see these dictators doing this because there wasn't the weakness that we're seeing today.
Finland's Prime Minister Sanna Marin has commented on Russia's unprovoked war on Ukraine.
The way out of the conflict is for Russia to leave Ukraine. That's the way out of the conflict. Thank you.
A man has smuggled drugs into prison.
A Texas man is facing up to 20 years in prison for flying a drone into a Fort Worth prison yard. Brian Henderson was arrested in August and pleaded guilty this week. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
This is USA Radio News.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-568-2790. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-568-2790. 800-568-2790.
Well, dear Blood River Radio family, you probably tuned in, you're awfully late, but I'll tell you anyway, Mr. Paul Fromm is on, and along with Jason Robb, and they've been having a conversation. We've been talking about the clergy plan, the flooding of formerly white nations of Canada, Europe, United States, with this millions and millions of unchecked, uncontrolled non-white immigrants. And I threw, Jason had said before the break, well, I think that's during the while we were on, we were talking with each other during the break, and Jason was said, he asked Paul, he couldn't understand why do these people that are giving up all this power, the old Canadian stock, do they not realize these non-whites are going to sooner or later, when they get a critical mass, are going to kick these old white guys out? And I told Jason and Paul that it kind of reminds me of Frederick William de Klerk. When he raised Nelson Mandela's arm in the air, and he said, "We're going to rule this country together," and it wasn't very long after that. I mean, I don't know, what's the last time anybody heard the clerk? Anyway, back to you, Jason. I just throwing that out there, you know, just prime the pump. Y'all go anywhere you want to, but I know you've got plenty of questions for Paul.
Well, right when we took the break, Paul was talking about he attended a Canadian Day picnic, I believe, and Paul, I think you was starting to talk about you appearing at that festival, I believe it was.
Oh, was this a union picnic that I was talking about?
Yeah, you said, I think it was like a Canadian Day, maybe it's a union picnic, but it was something like that you attended it, but then we had to take a break, so you were getting ready to talk to Paul about it.
It was an all-candidates picnic. And it was for union members and all candidates running for office here in Hamilton. So I went. And at first I was welcomed at the reception desk and told, well, you know, go and get yourself a hot dog. And it was all very nice. And then this, decidedly radical feminist middle-aged woman came over I guess I can't guess about her sexuality, but anyway, not very appealing. And she said, oh, you'll have to be. I said, why? Well, you're not welcome. I said, I got an invitation. Here it is, all candidates. Well, she said, the optics wouldn't be good. What do you mean the optics? Well, you're a white supremacist. I said, do you know me? You know, you don't know. Well, that it was on the CBC. That's, you know, the Communist Broadcasting Corporation. I said, they never even interviewed me. It's a complete lie. You made an accusation, and I'm telling you it's not true, okay? Anyway, it didn't matter. My attendance at the all-candidates picnic lasted a little under 3 minutes. You know, from a campaign point of view, it didn't matter. There were perhaps 20 people. And, I would do far better going to a store or, you know, outside a supermarket or someplace like that and meeting people. I can reach far more than 20 people and, you know, and probably impress a fair number of them. Nonetheless, you know, it showed how leftist and narrow-minded these people are. And that, you know, words don't mean anything. I mean, all candidates mean all candidates.
Right. Well, you don't fit their narrative. You know, you don't fit the idea of that. You know, here's a white male Christian who's have concerns about Canada and its citizens, and you don't fit their agenda, their narrative. You know, that's why.
No, that's right. Well, I also want to show them I'm not afraid of them. So, you know, I'll go right into the dragon's den and present myself socially. You know, if you want to make it a not all candidates meeting, then, well, okay, that's on you. But I wrote it up for the website.
Right. Well, so Paul, with COVID that, you know, happened up there in Canada, of course, obviously Canada was very horrible as far as, you know, attempting to, you know, tyrannical government up there during that time. Have you seen whether or not that has helped in Canada specifically, citizens, average citizen out there, kind of rethinking of the government's position? It's like, well, maybe the government really is not looking out for me, you know. Have you got any feedback from that? I mean, any from, you know, from just average citizen out there?
The answer is yes. A lot of people have been rudely awakened and have been informed by this. The people who a few years ago would have said, well, I read it in the paper, it must be true, or saw it on the TV, it must be true, now question it because they know they were lied to in so many different ways about COVID. And I'm picking up support from a lot of these people who've been in the freedom movement. There wasn't even such thing as a freedom movement as 3 years ago because there wasn't COVID. And then along came COVID, and a lot of people began to wake up to the fact they'd been lied to, and that they were being forced to do all sorts of things they didn't want to do, be vaccinated. And, you know, whatever your view about the vaccine, you should have the right to choose. You know, if you believe it's safe, you want to do it, fine. If you want to wear a diaper in your mouth, well, that's, you know, be my guest, but don't force me to do it. I'm working very closely with the freedom forces in Hamilton. There's not just one group, there's several, but there are a lot of people who have awakened, and they know that many of our rulers have not been working in our interests, and that gives me something to work with.
Right, right. Well, I think that's kind of the same thing here in the United States. You know, with the COVID, that has helped stir a lot of people to start questioning, you know, the government, its policies, and start, you know, thinking about, well, maybe the government is really not looking after us at all. And so that has, you know, been a positive effect. And so I was assuming probably the same thing was happening in Canada. What's the racial population in Hamilton?
Well, it's about 10% non-white, I think.
Okay.
You know, a generation ago, it was overwhelmingly white, working class, a lot of people from Europe, Eastern Europe. You know, so it's a steel town, you know, I mean, in many ways, like Pittsburgh. You know, as with much of the rest of Canada, it's changing because of a mass immigration and, you know, mass intake from the third world. You know, it affects everything. But,
Do they in Canada, when with the immigration issues come up, is any other party really focusing on immigration, or is it basically your party, what your issues are?
Municipal elections are not, there are no parties in most of Canada. So everybody runs as an independent. Now, quite often, you know, people have, you know, connections with parties, but sure. No, I'm working on my own. Yeah.
Right, right. Absolutely. The, you know, here, of course, in the United States, you know, we are bogged down with the two-party system. You know, either you got to be a Republican or a Democrat, because for the most part, if you try to be a third party, election laws are so in favor of the two-party system that it's very hard for a third party to try to gain any type of momentum. And so, you know, obviously, Donald Trump, you know, when he ran for president, got president, he, even though he was a Republican, he didn't go along with the Republican agenda. It was more of an American first policy, and everything was for United States. And of course, that's why the liberals just cannot stand him. Have you noticed, or has there any been sense that there's been kind of a carryover of that into Canada, where you have people in Canada start thinking, hey, Canada first, you know, let's look at policies that favor Canadians, and, you know, from the trade or immigration or anything like that? Think about that, maybe, Paul, and maybe give us an answer after the break.
Yep. Hey, thank you for announcing the break, Jason. People, we'll be right. People eaters, we'll be right back after this last break, folks. Hang on.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C. and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud.
The 2020 elections were one of the most corrupt in history. See the proof for yourself.
We tracked 2,000 mules making multiple ballot drops.
2,000 mules. The shocking new movie from Dinesh D'Souza.
One mule made 53 trips to 20 drop boxes.
2,000 mules. Join the special virtual premiere and Q&A on May 7th. Get your tickets now. Available only at 2000mules.com. 2000mules.com. Sponsored by Salem Media Group.
Excuse me, Captain. I know this may sound silly, but can you fly?
Nope. Never had a lesson.
Yes, indeed, you have to say something.
Hey, Blood River Radio family. This has been a great night. You know, we've had four great guests. This is the first time we've had guests on in a long time. I talked about that during the first hour, but it's really great to have guests on, at least every now and then. That's for sure. And we've really had them on good. We have such a staple of great co-hosts on now, and they usually have so much to talk about. We don't get a chance to get guests on tonight, but I've been really, really grateful that we could get them on tonight. And I know I'll say this one more time. You probably all hadn't tuned in late, but if you have, we have Mr. Paul Fromm and Jason Robb, and they're doing a great interview together. And with that, I forgot. I think Paul was speaking, but I forgot. I know Jason has. He's younger, got a better memory than I am. So go back, Jason. Carry on for you and Paul. We're taking off.
Yeah. So I was asking Paul. You know, with the Trump election, he obviously was focusing on America First with its trade policies to, you know, reducing immigration, you know, and everything should be, you know, America, you know, be more of a nationalistic viewpoint. And I was wondering, did that spill over into Canada, you know, where Canadians are thinking, you know, Canada first, you know, and policies for Canada and you know, local issues and even national issues, if that spilled over into Canada at all?
Do you want to answer that?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. There was definitely a magnet effect. Donald Trump's leadership excited a lot of Canadians. Now the official party line is, Donald Trump, it's so terrible. We're lucky we're in Canada. But many Canadians appreciated Trump's leadership. And that idea of putting our own interests first is very important. And a lot of Canadians are feeling that way. So I'm getting a good response to my message. And that is, we focus on traffic gridlock, but that's largely a result of mass immigration and the failure to build sufficient infrastructure. And this gets very controversial. The left goes crazy. They say, you say immigrants come here to cause traffic gridlock. No, I don't say that. They come here to improve themselves and to feast on our goodies. But traffic gridlock is an inevitable result of massively expanding your population, unless you're prepared to build an awful lot of new roads and hospitals and so on, which various governments have not done. So it's a good argument.
Yeah. Well, I know here in the United States, there's a group called Numbers, I believe Numbers USA, and they're a immigration reform group, but basically their agenda is to reduce immigrants in the United States. And part of their platform is kind of the same thing that you were talking about, you know, the traffic gridlock. And they had recently published a book back in March of this year, over 180 pages, just talking about the amount of land loss because of immigrants. And, of course, in the United States, since 1965, there's been over 78 million additional immigrants that's come to the United States, and vast majority of that has been from your non-white countries. And so as a result of that, you know, you have population explosion, and then you have your land loss with new homes, suburbs being built, different malls and roads, and how that is destroying the natural habitat in the United States because of the amount of massive explosion of your non-white third world country immigrants coming into the United States, illegal aliens basically. And so, in Canada, I'm sure it's probably the same thing with all the millions of non-white immigrants coming in Canada. It's probably causing a lot of not only gridlock because of new additional arrivals, but then they got their children and their relatives then that are following them as well, and causing basically a chaos in your major cities there in Canada.
That's substantially true. This population change is catastrophic. They're replacing us. What is particularly infuriating is we're being replaced not because some other country won a war and invaded us. That'd be bad enough. We're being replaced by absolutely high treason on the part of people who look like you and me. For a variety of reasons, self-hatred, in some cases, greed. Your country club Republicans favored massive immigration, legal or illegal, because we can have cheap labor, even if they're illegal. That is part of the rationale up here. But there's also a spiritual wasteland or emptiness. Much of our elite hate us. They hate our civilization. Our prime minister is always issuing an apology to some minority group or other, always for things that happened in the distant past. He's done many terrible things himself, but he doesn't apologize for what he's done. And of course, as a Christian person, there's no validity to an apology. I mean, I can't apologize because Jason ran a red light. I didn't do it, but I can only apologize for things I've done. But we apologize to the Indians because we educated them. We apologize to the Chinese because we imposed a head tax, which actually some of their leaders had asked for, to restrict immigration at a time when, this would be years ago, but if they couldn't find a job, there was no welfare, they would starve. So then we apologize to the Sikhs because in 1914 we turned back a boatload of illegals. Well, there's nothing to apologize for. Then we apologize to the Jews because in 1939 we turned away a boat called the St. Louis. Your country turned them away too, so did Cuba. And this is before the war, and these were rich Jews getting out of Germany, that supposedly is a horrible thing for us to do, but the fact was we had 30% unemployment, and our deputy minister of immigration back then, a man by the name of Frederick Blair, a great patriot, was asked by the prime minister to do some research, and the prime minister asked him, well, how many should we take in? And Frederick Blair said to the prime minister, none is too many.
Amen.
We've apologized for that too. I should say not we, the present prime minister. It's a not very subtle way of trashing the entire old stock Canadian past. You see, all we were a bunch of racists. We mistreated the Indians. We didn't want to be overrun by Jews. I mean, we were just a collection of those horrible people. That's the impression that's left. I know the word treatment is a pretty strong one, but it's certainly treason against us.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that eventually will have a double effect because you have when you have constantly being called, you know, you're a racist, you know, you're just horrible and like that, after a while, you know, you have people, you know, talking about white people in general, I think after a while they think, well, if I'm a racist because of the fact that I don't want it changed, then I guess I'm a racist. You know, it just kind of like it has a double effect, you know. I suspect in Canada, kind of like the United States, you know, you have your different thoughts of your white citizens and your probably rural areas that are more aligned to traditional Canadians and traditional values than you have in your, you know, major cities. You know, in your your urban areas, you probably have more of your white in your urban areas that do not maybe feel a connection to traditional Canada, and your rural areas, you probably have more of your whites that do.
Yeah, true.
You think that the same thing?
Yes.
Okay. I do know that as a result of that, you know, you see these elections, and you see a almost kind of a balkanization of the United States with that sentiment of your rural areas and your states that are starting to buck the federal government's agenda. And
yes.
I would assume, you know, probably in Canada and obviously in Europe, you kind of have that same effect. You have your different parts of Canada, you know, your precincts or your, I guess you don't call them states, you call them
provinces,
yeah, that have the same type of deal. You have different provinces, and even within the provinces, those people that are starting to buck the system as far as, you know, we're not going along with the, you know, the insane policies of Canada.
Yeah. I think that's true. A lot of people are, you know, are waking up and becoming active and scared. They're scared of the changes being imposed on us. And I'm getting a lot of support from people like that.
So what the people here in the United States, I don't know, you know, Eddie, I don't know what, you know, the viewership is, you know, in Canada, you know, with Blood River Radio. But here in the United States, what can they do to help you out, Paul?
Yes.
And maybe run.
Glad you brought that up.
Yeah, I would assume probably the biggest thing is probably financial support. You probably, you know, wouldn't need as much money as can be sent to you to help with your campaign and get things printed and help, you know, cover costs on traveling and stuff like that. But how can they contact you and get a hold of you?
Okay, and you're right. I guess all of us in the patriotic and freedom movement need financial support. That's true. Probably the easiest way would be to email me. It's quite simple, and we can then have a chat. It's my email is paul@paulfromm.com, and so that's paul@paulfromm.com. And, you know, we can chat, or I can refer you to our websites. We publish monthly newsletters on free speech and immigration. I'd be glad to, if somebody would send me their mailing address, I'd be glad to send them samples.
Fellas, we've run completely out of time. And people, if you have any questions, if you'd like to get in touch with any of our guests we've had on tonight, and you don't know how to do it, shoot me an email, Eddie@BloodRiverRadio.com. That's Eddie@BloodRiverRadio.com. It's totally an encrypted website. I think our webmaster says we have this proton thing, so you will not be discovered. So thank you so much tonight, Paul. It's been a treat having you on. It really has. It's been too long since you've been on. Got to have you again on before too long. And you always work really well with Jason. Y'all been knowing each other for a long time.
I really
thank
you
too.
Would you be able to send me a link to this program so I can...
Yes, sir. I certainly will. I'll shoot you an email, too. People, we've run completely out of time. Thank you so much for being on tonight. Thank you, everybody.